Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 208, entitled, How to Get More Done, Make More Money, and Feel Great While Doing It, I chat with David Hauser. David Hauser is an angel investor, serial entrepreneur, and the founder of Grasshopper and Chargeify. And in today's episode, David talks about how he created two multi-million dollar businesses and what he learned along the way about work-life balance and health. He covers his best tips for optimizing your health and being far more productive throughout the day. David talks about constantly testing and biohacking his diet, sleep, exercise, meditation practices, and productivity habits throughout the day on his way to becoming healthier and wealthier. If you're wondering how to become healthier and more productive in your own life, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Have you tried our newest Elite Life Nutrition supplements yet? Yep, that's right, we've got two new products. Milk Thistle and NAC, N-acetylcysteine, the two best supplements in the world for your liver. Both of these babies are incredibly nourishing for your liver and can help with the natural detoxification of so many toxins from the air, water, and food that you eat. We're constantly bombarded with toxins, and unfortunately, it only seems to be getting worse. This means your liver is working harder and harder without getting the necessary support it needs. And that's why I'm so happy to bring this Milk Thistle and NAC to you guys. I've been taking both of these supplements every day for the last few years, and I absolutely love them. Especially after a night out of drinking one too many. And yeah, there's been a fair share of those over the last few years, but don't tell anybody about that. But anyways, that's why I knew I had to bring these two products onto the Elite Life Nutrition brand. I absolutely love them. They really are incredible with helping to support your liver, also helping out with the natural detoxification of your body, and they help boost your immune system. So do yourself a favor and get one or both of these fantastic supplements today. Go to EliteLifeNutrition.com/products to visit our full products page, or go to EliteLifeNutrition.com/NAC or EliteLifeNutrition.com/milk. And that's NAC for the NAC and MILK as in milk for the milk thistle. And by the way, there is no milk in this milk thistle product. That's just the funky name of the herb they came up with many years back. But anyways, go to EliteLifeNutrition.com/product to view all our products at any time, including both this NAC and new milk thistle product we have, or just go to EliteLifeNutrition.com/NAC or EliteLifeNutrition.com/milk to go right to the page to view either the NAC or the milk. But either way, get one or both of these products. And don't forget that the links to these products and all links, for that matter, that we mentioned on the podcast can be found right in the show notes. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is David Hauser from DavidHauser.com. David, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in today's topic of choice, and I know you're very familiar with this, the struggle that entrepreneurs go through in balancing their health, with balancing the business side of things and not getting enveloped by the craziness of running a business, especially if you're an entrepreneur and a new entrepreneur. And David, you kind of, over the last couple of years especially, have gotten this down. So first things first, for those who don't know much about your background, can you just take a minute or two and just talk about what it is that you do now and how you got to that point?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So now I'm an investor and I also starting a few new companies. But in the past, I started and ran Grasshopper, Grasshopper.com, which was a virtual phone system for entrepreneurs, professional image, and stay connected with your customers via, you know, virtual phone numbers. So no hardware, software, right? Built that from zero to $30 million a year in revenue and ultimately sold it to a large publicly traded company. And, you know, along the way, did a number of other things, founded other companies, made a lot of angel investments, met a lot of people. But really, my core purpose throughout that entire time and our core purpose at Grasshopper was empowering entrepreneurs to succeed, right? And that's what we drove towards every day. And, you know, that's why, you know, when I woke up each morning, I was excited to go to work. And, you know, through that whole journey, journey, you know, I went through a, you know, kind of personal health journey from following traditional conventional advice of just exercise more and eat low fat to today kind of, you know, creating my own experiments over time and finding what's worked best for my body and finding the optimal kind of health structure through a framework I developed. But most importantly, the thing I learned as an entrepreneur is figuring out how to integrate my life as an entrepreneur compared to work-life balance. And that's something I feel pretty strongly about.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. So real quick, what does Grasshopper do? How did you get into making $30 million a year in revenue? I mean, that just sounds crazy for most people. How did you get to that point where you built that company up? How long did it take? And what exactly is Grasshopper?
Yeah, so Grasshopper, you know, we provide a phone system for entrepreneurs. So press one for sales, two for support, on hold music, transferring, voicemail transcription, all that. So you don't have to give out your personal cell phone number or house phone or anything like that. Right. And I think the easiest explanation, a lot of people understand how Google Voice works. It's kind of like Google Voice for businesses. Right. And that's an oversimplification, but it's the clearest description. And it took us a long time to get to that point. I mean, the company started more than 14 years ago. I sold it more than just over 2 years ago. So it took us 12 years roughly to get to that kind of revenue mark. And with a relatively small team, we had under 50 people. And really what we found was we were just selling something that the market really wanted, right? And we got very good at optimization and testing and A/B testing within marketing and all the things we were doing. And it's actually what I applied to my next part of life, right? We were a very good marketing company that sold a product that small businesses and entrepreneurs wanted.
Cool. And then you dived into the Chargeify thing. When at what point was that, and how's that doing right now?
Yeah, so Chargeify is doing quite well, actually. We actually built it as part of an internal project at Grasshopper called Grasshopper Labs, where we built a number of companies, most of which were things that we needed to solve, right? So we needed to do billing for ourselves and bill hundreds of thousands of people each month on their credit card and bill them again and again, right? So we built a billing solution for that, and that's what Chargeify is. So Chargeify manages recurring billing for other businesses. And provides, you know, software for that. And, you know, Chargeify is doing really well. I don't have day-to-day involvement anymore, but the team is growing and the customer base is growing and revenue is growing quite well right now. I think as more and more people get into, you know, recurring business models of all different types.
Cool. I read somewhere, too, that Mark Cuban jumped on board of that. Were you on, like, Shark Tank or something? How'd you get involved with Mark Cuban?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. Mark Cuban did invest in Chargeify. We were not on Shark Tank, but we actually just reached out to him cold pitched him on it. And I mean, it was quite a simple process. And for someone as busy as Mark Cuban, he's done a great job of, you know, answering emails personally and being helpful and doing those things. And it sounds kind of trite and small, but, like, you know, trust me, this was not a big investment for him. But, you know, when you respond to an email, right, there's a lot of people that are, you know, just as busy as him who come up with some excuse not to reply to emails, right? And I think that was very meaningful to us as a company. And the reason we took the investment is we believed, and I think it was the right thing, was being in the financial services space, we needed, you know, to kind of have that solid quote-unquote backing. Right. And say, look, someone that people trust and know said this is a secure thing. Right.
No, I'm sure that helped out a ton. How long ago did he come on board, and what has he, like, brought to the table as far as bringing up, like, sales and revenue and just, like you said, the image of your company being way more professional?
Yeah, I think the biggest factor was really that trust factor, right? Someone has signed on and said this is, you know, trustworthy and good and good enough to manage money, in essence, right? And transactions and a lot of transactions. Along the way has been helpful and kind of as we ask things, but quite honestly, we didn't ask for a lot of stuff. Our goal was very specific, I think it was the right choice to take on that investment, and hopefully we performed well in his portfolio because of it.
David, so I want to switch gears and dive into what you're focusing on at this point in time, which is the new book Evolve that you came out with. Has it been released yet?
It hasn't been released yet.
What's the date on that?
probably April at this point.
Okay.
We're kind of working through the final steps right now.
Okay, cool. So the book you're working on right now, Evolve, it basically talks about how you're optimized or how you did and how you continue to optimize your health as opposed and you know, being a busy businessman, entrepreneur. How do you take charge of your health and make sure you optimize that to make sure you can actually better perform at business and do better at obviously making money and being more successful there? So how did you come up with this idea with the concept of, you know, focusing on the health first and then actually using that to be better at business?
Yeah. Yeah. So I quickly realized, you know, I started the company in my, you know, kind of early years, right? I was in college, I definitely was not eating healthy. I was staying up very late working, some nights staying up till 3-4 in the morning because it was kind of quiet and no one was bothering me. You know, not living a healthy lifestyle at all. And definitely I was overweight, struggled with that for a long time. And I think my body being young at the time kind of fought some of those things back. So I didn't notice it as much, right? And I just kind of kept on that path. I was like, you know what? I'm just working hard. You know, this is the beginning of the company. And I quickly started to realize that was having a damaging impact on me and also my productivity, right? And so for a number of years, struggled through kind of that, you know, shame and frustration of trying all sorts of things and not getting results, both from a weight loss perspective, but also just from a general health perspective, like getting up in the morning and feeling rested and ready for the day, not having aches and pains in your knees and legs and shoulders and back, right? All these little things that I think we start to ignore over time because they just come on very slowly. So that was my goal, right? And I ignored it for a long time, and then I tested a lot of things just randomly. I ran Boston Marathon, I did triathlons, I worked out, I did every diet you could possibly imagine that was a trendy diet, right? And didn't necessarily get results or constant results. And, you know, kind of around the time I was starting to look at selling the company, I stepped back and started to think about the things that were working well within our business was this very simple concept of optimization and testing, right? Like, we can have an idea and it might sound great, but if we don't have the data to back it up, just as simple a thing as like the conversion rate on a web page, right? I may think a red button is better than a blue button, but what I think doesn't really matter. It's only what really performs, right? And it's a very simple concept, and we applied this throughout Grasshopper to great success, right? Very lean, small team doing amazing things because of these processes. So why couldn't I apply that to health, right? And I stepped back and started to you know, really, you know, integrate those into my life, right? The same concepts and the same ideas into this framework, which is a very simple testing framework for yourself.
Yeah. And that, you know, that framework has been proven time and time again to be very effective. It works. Like, I don't know when it came across, when people really started using it, but it's very popular now. And I think maybe in the last decade or two, it's become really popular just because so many people have been so successful with A/B testing stuff and actually, you know, throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, but actually doing it in more of a scientific way. How did you come up with that idea? Where did you learn that philosophy in, you know, for your business?
Yeah, so we met a gentleman by the name of Jonathan, and he was very early in this space for online, right? Like, this wasn't developed for online, but it was adapted. So if you look way, way back into business, obviously the idea of optimization in business has been around forever. But if you start to look at this process and this framework, you can go back to Toyota and others where they have this continuous optimization or continuous improvement loop, right? I think that's where a lot of it comes from. So we met Jonathan, who had been very early in this space for online, worked on some political campaigns at the time that used a tremendous amount of testing to optimize their online donation flows, email campaigns, and that. And he said, look, here's the results we've seen. And at the time, we're like, okay, it sounds good, but I don't know, right? And what was really interesting is we said, okay, let's try it, right? What can we lose? And we saw the results, and we saw the uplift or the change in conversion on a given web page or ultimately our signups at the end of the day. And like each very small incremental change there was quite large when you're getting hundreds of thousands of visitors and thousands of signups, right? So, I mean, I think that's the popularity of it. And now today, I think people are even more familiar than when we started doing this, you know, 10 years ago or so.
Yeah, and the technology has just gone through the roof the last few years. It's probably way easier to do this kind of testing now than when you started. And, you know, probably makes things a lot easier for you now. But, you know, you wish you had it 10 years ago, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now the technology is awesome, right? Like you can go online and create, you know, 10 landing pages with any one of these tools and test very quickly. We were setting up both very expensive and complex tests that was definitely not that easy.
Yeah, for sure. So how have you then used this concept, this idea to your health? What kinds of things have you been optimizing and actually testing out to optimize?
Yeah. So really everything. I started with diet just because of this kind of ongoing frustration. And I said, like, there must be, you know, why am I just listening to conventional wisdom about diet? And I'm obsessive and definitely go to the extreme, right? Like someone says to me, you know, maybe you can, you know, run outside, and I run the Boston Marathon, you know, 4 months later, not fast or well, right? Yeah. But like, either I'm all in or I'm not.
Yeah, so impressive.
Yeah, for good or for bad, right? Like yeah. I'm sure a lot of people would complain about my obsessiveness. So I applied that to diet, and I said, look, I've spent 10 years being obsessive about eating low fat, you know, eliminating red meat, doing all the things we're told to do, right? And so I tested everything, right? And I said, you know, maybe I should try vegan or plant-based. I did that for 6 months, all in, right? Not like I'm going to do a little bit and try, like all in, do it. I did low carb ketogenic diet. I did vegetarian diet. All of these different things, and I started to pick the further extremes, right? Because I had tried the conventional wisdom for so long with no success, and ultimately, based on this framework and kind of just taking feedback along the way and saying, how do I feel each morning? Am I losing weight? Yes or no, right? Like at what pace am I losing weight? How's my brain fog midday? Questions like that started to find the fuel plan that worked for me, right? Mm-hmm. And it happens to be that a low-carb diet works for me best. That's not true for everyone, right? Like, I think that's the point of both the book and the framework, that it's not about what works for me. It's about what works for you, right? And finding that. So then other things I've optimized, sleep, have some great tips for that I think work for most people, right? But changing my sleep habits and pattern have been tremendously powerful in modifying and increasing my productivity. And it's very simple things, right? So going to bed between 9 and 10 p.m. Roughly, right? Not exact. Some nights are a little bit later, some nights are earlier. Getting up naturally without an alarm clock, roughly when the sun comes out. So, you know, 6 a.m. roughly. Reducing light before bed. So trying not to watch TV and on the computer, or if I'm on the computer, at least having some sort of app to reduce the blue light on the screen. Not eating within 3 hours of bed, right? Like all very simple things, but as measured through the framework, I can answer the question, did it work for me? Yes or no? And I can see those incremental changes along the way, ultimately getting to the idea of being, when I wake up in the morning, I feel fully rested and ready for the day. That's the ultimate goal, right?
So starting with the diet, low carb, what types of foods are you eating? What types of foods did you eliminate? And how have you found that to work best for you? Why do you know that low carb has been better than some of the other ones you tried?
Yeah. So I measured a few different things. One is obviously weight, right? So your body is telling you something naturally with weight and body fat percentage, right? Are you storing fat, or are you using fat and getting rid of it, right? Those are factors. How do I feel, right? So on a scale of 1 to 3, 1 being bad, 2 being good, and 3 being great, I want more 3 days than 1 and 2 days, right? And then same type of scale, but looking at brain fog or productivity, because that's something I struggled with in the afternoon times. Like I just get this like kind of glaze in the afternoons after working, you know, until like 1, 2 o'clock. And on certain diets, that either stayed the same or increased, and on certain diets decreased, right? And I wanted the decrease, so I measured that. For sure, looking at, for me, weight and body composition, there's a clear change from going from 215 to 220 pounds down to 180 that I am today, and a significant change in body fat as I built muscle, right? And again, those are interesting metrics that are important to look at when changing, you know, fuel or diet consumption.
What were your metrics there?
Yeah, so I mean, over that period of time, I lost, you know, call it 30 pounds, you know, 215, 220 down to 180, 185, body fat percentage down to about 19%, depending on the measurement. And, you know, I've done obsessively all sorts of crazy measurements and DEXA scans and, you know, doing the pool and everything else to do body fat percentage. But ultimately, I can tell you none of those really matter. As long as you use the same scale each morning, and I use the Nokia scale because it, you know, tracks it back online. So I have data back until 2012, I think, 2011, from the same scale. So, you know, that scale is what I use for measurement on an ongoing basis. But then how do I feel, right? Like, I think that factors into the weight question as well. Like, I feel so much better at 185 pounds. Absent of how I look or anything else, like I just feel better. And like, that's what we want in life, right? Is to be amazing and feel great every day.
Oh, definitely. So, I mean, that's pretty cool, man. You've been tracking this for about 8 years or so now. That's a lot of data to work with. And so what types of foods are you eating then? And have you been eating?
Yeah. So I eliminated, you know, I tested a lot of this stuff and went to the extreme, of course, right? But I eliminated pretty much all carbs except vegetables, right? So, you know, my diet consists of mostly a plant-based diet, right? Which is very weird when you tell someone that you're eating a ketogenic or a low-carb diet. Their assumption is like a lot of meat and animal products, which is just not the case, right? A well-formulated low-carb or ketogenic diet, at least the way it's worked for me best, and is very easy to do, is actually a lot of vegetables, right? So my typical plate would be about 80% vegetables, and then the rest, a small amount of protein and then fat. And yeah, maybe some of the fat comes from animal sources, but that doesn't have to be, right? You could use avocado oil, olive oil, obviously adding fat in other ways from coconut or avocado itself as a whole piece. I eat a tremendous amount of avocados. That's probably one of the largest things in my diet. A lot of nuts, so macadamia nuts, almond nuts, nut butter, things like that. Definitely eat a tremendous amount of vegetables, broccoli, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, you know, all the green vegetables. I don't eat a tremendous amount of carrots and tomatoes and some of the other nightshades or root vegetables just because a little bit higher in carb content. And every now and then I'll eat some sweet potato or white rice just to kind of replenish or remind the body through this cycling idea where, you know, the human body was made for these ups and downs over time. I don't think it's healthy ever to just have a constant diet that's exactly the same. There needs to be some variation. So I try to introduce the variation with those things. And, you know, most importantly, I tested this by measuring my ketones in my blood over a period of time. And I no longer measure them because I know how I feel and I know exactly what reactions I have. I've done continuous glucose monitoring where you have the little device that's, you know, stuck on your skin and you get glucose readings every 15 minutes. So I know exactly what foods, how they impact my blood sugars and things like that. Now, for me, it was interesting because I love data, one, right? And I'm obsessive about it. I don't think it's necessary for most people, but that's what I found to be useful.
If you have not checked out our YouTube videos, go to EliteManMagazine.com/YouTube right now. Our YouTube channel just launched a couple weeks back, and already the feedback has been phenomenal. Equal parts entertaining and informative, our YouTube videos will make you laugh, cry, smile, think, question, and celebrate the fantastic knowledge being bestowed to all. Every week, we cover all your favorite Elite Man topics and break down everything you need to know to be the best man you can be. Go to EliteManMagazine.com/YouTube right now or click the link in the show notes to start viewing our videos. Make sure you like and leave a comment with your thoughts on each video too. It helps us out a ton and helps spread the message and grow our channel. Also, subscribe to our channel right now if you haven't yet. I promise you're going to love these videos and the ones we'll be releasing in the upcoming future. Subscribe to our channel and watch now at EliteManMagazine.com/YouTube or click the link in the show notes. So are you like in ketosis most of the time or just some of the time or, you know, hardly ever?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. So when I was measuring ketones, and I measured them for about a year straight, multiple times a day, so that's a lot of measurements compared to most people. I was in ketosis most of the time, and, you know, pretty solidly. I mean, there was probably in a year period only a few days where I wasn't necessarily in ketosis. But what was interesting is the measurements bounced up and down for varying reasons. And that's what I found most interesting is it was relatively easy once you put focus on it to both get into ketosis and stay into ketosis. But what was interesting was the variation of numbers over time based on what I ate, based on fasting schedules, based on a lot of other things I was doing. So that was much more educational than just yes or no question, am I in ketosis, right? In the long run, I don't think it necessarily matters the exact measurement, right? Like people say it's between 0.5 and 3, when you're measuring blood ketones. Maybe. I think the only time that it really matters is when you're applying the diet from a medical standpoint, like for epilepsy or seizures or something like that. And that's a very extreme circumstance, and that's probably much higher levels. But for most people, I don't think the number matters all that much. It's the learning and understanding your body that's much more important.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting, though. It's interesting to hear, like, you track all these things data-wise, but at the end of the day, you know, you're going back to how you feel, and that's really the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was developing a company that was all about this data and tracking because I love the data, but I quickly realized, one, that the data is only interesting to me because I like data. It's not all that useful. And two, I think for the vast majority of people, it is actually a negative thing compared to even a, marginally positive thing. So we stopped developing that company in the way that we were looking at it because, my goal of empowering people and empowering people to succeed would not have been met by providing a tool that was marginally beneficial at best and maybe, negative or damaging, right?
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I like the point that you made too earlier about having different diets for different people because everyone is unique. Our chemistry, our physiology is all different and some diets will work better for other people. I mean, you tracked everything under the sun, did vegan, did vegetarian, did keto, and low carb seems to be best for you. So, how can you argue with the results of how you're feeling on a day-to-day basis?
Right. And there's people who are very, religious about diets. Yeah. And it's a very funny thing because there's so little good data about it, but people are very religious about it. And for different reasons, right? And I can't blame people. I used to be that person in regards to conventional wisdom, but I found much more importantly, like you said, it's about what works for the individual and trying different things and, opening your mind to maybe this works for me. Maybe I'll try this. I think that's much more powerful than saying this will work for everyone, right? That's not true. It's just not true.
So your sleep, how did you go about optimizing your sleep? Because it's funny, I was actually a night owl myself, and you said 3-4 in the morning going to bed a lot of the time. I mean, that was totally me as well up until about 6 months ago, maybe even like 4 or 5 months ago. But I kind of just like trickled it down every night. I just decided I wanted to get lower. So every night I would go to bed like 10 minutes earlier and wake up 10 minutes earlier. And then, after 2 months, I was, completely changed my sleep. So now I'm going to bed around like midnight, which is still kind of late for most people, but for me, it's pretty early, and I'm waking up at, 8 every morning, so.
Yeah.
It's pretty good for me comparing, you know, to where I was before, where it was like 4 in the morning going to sleep and then waking up around like 11, 10 or 11 every morning. So,
yeah,
it's, you know, it's pretty good. How did you go about doing that?
Yeah, so I was the person who used to like get home from work and I'd sit down and watch TV or after dinner or whatever, and I'd fall asleep on the couch and then wake up and go to bed later, right? And I always found that very bizarre, right? Like my body's telling me I'm tired, but I'll work until 3 or 4 in the morning, right? And especially, you know, kind of having to find energy to do that, I would also consume food that probably wasn't healthy to stay awake, right? And we've all been in that place where we're like, okay, I feel hungry, but I also feel very tired. And it's more that I feel tired and I know that I need to eat to stay awake, right? Yeah. And so I wanted to kind of get rid of that feeling, one. And I knew that my sleep was very important. So first, obviously, I started measuring it. So that was the first thing I did. Did all sorts of different types of measurements. I did everything from in-lab sleep testing, at-home sleep testing, you know, where you have like the 20 diodes attached to your legs and your head and the whole deal, breathing through the nose thing. Like I wanted to see like exactly really what my stages of sleep were. I had an Oura ring that monitored sleep, and I actually found that it to be just as accurate as the lab testing. The device under the bed from Nokia, you know, all sorts of different pieces, right? I had all this data, and it was very clear that each of the tests I was doing, I tried supplementation. I tried all sorts of things. The biggest impact I got was going to bed an hour earlier, right? So instead of going to bed at 11, I went to bed at 10. And I felt better in the morning. So I kind of pushed that further and further back and tried kind of like 8:30 to 9 and found that's best. And you know, also found in the research that it's clear that the human body is, just because of our evolution, has been designed to go to bed roughly when the sun sets, you know, and we get the best sleep between kind of 9 p.m. and 1 a.m. And it doesn't just shift, right? So if I go to bed at 11, it doesn't like shift based on number of hours. It's something with our circadian rhythm, the sun, the earth, all the things that have been around for millions of years. That's when our most efficient and best restorative sleep happens. So, you know, that was my target to get to bed earlier. So I tried doing that. Like I said, I tried supplementation. I tried, PMF devices, which are pulse electric magnetic field devices, that kind of, try to bring your brain waves into that state. What else? Reducing blue light. Tried the crazy glasses that people wear. Didn't have very much impact. Again, so like what I learned along the way was, one, the data doesn't matter all that much. I think it's interesting. Most importantly, it's how do I feel when I wake up on a scale of 1 to 3, and can I say that I feel totally rested and ready for the day? Yes or no. Two, that the biggest changes happen from the smallest things. So getting a new pillow that really helped my neck and my back. So I tested out about 20 different pillows, probably an extreme, right? Like I don't think that's what everyone needs to do. But that's, you know, a relatively cheap change. I got a new mattress. Great thing about mattresses now is you can buy them online and they have 100-night roughly, you know, free return policy. So most anyone can try a few of them, right, and find a mattress that really works for them. And then going to bed earlier and getting up naturally, right? I think this is one that I learned by mistake. I used to set an alarm every morning and get up. And one morning I forgot to do that, and I just woke up and kind of naturally a little bit earlier. But I wasn't worrying about, did I miss the alarm? When's the alarm going to go off? Looking at my phone or my clock. Like, I just kind of naturally woke up. And obviously there's exceptions to that. If I have to catch a very early flight, I'll still set an alarm. Like, but I mean, out of, you know, a year, 365 days, maybe I set an alarm 5 or 10 days now. Right. So again, very small changes had the biggest impact.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things and factors that go into sleep, and I think you brought up a number of good points. Another thing, too, to consider, I don't know if you've heard of this, David, yet or not, but, you know, I'm sure you probably have come across it in your research, but I just had a guy on the show last week, I believe, a guy by the name of Daniel DeBon. He's a big EMF guy, electromagnetic fields frequency guy.
Yep.
And one of the things he said, which was very interesting, was that EMFs actually contribute to, the research says EMFs contribute a lot to sleep disturbances, and the fact that they stop the production of melatonin in the body, in the brain, and the closer they are to you, the more of an impact they have. So just putting your phone, if you're 1 foot away from like a cell phone, it reduces the EMF power by 80%. And if it's if you're 4 feet away, it's like 98%. So the further you put the phone away from you, the more you're going to drop down the effects that it's having over you. And that can, he said, doing that with people he's worked with over the years has like completely changed their sleep, like night and day. Like you wouldn't believe these people didn't sleep for years, like good. And then they just got the cell phones, got the electronics out of the room, and they just slept great after that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's merit to it. I caution people because when you start to dig into that field, you get a lot of like, you know, you got to like turn off the outlets under your bed and like, you know, put tinfoil on the walls and like it gets a little extreme, right?
Yeah, no, that's crazy. That's the crazy people there.
But, you know, like moving your cell phone, I think like there is a ton of merit in that for multiple reasons. And I think my bet would be most of the benefit we get from taking our cell phone and putting it across the room, for example, which I recommend for a lot of people, is we no longer have the inclination or feeling to pick it up and look at it in the middle of the night or early in the morning or late at night before bed, right? Like that behavioral change is very impactful, right? Just by putting it across the room. But yeah, I mean, in general, I say like set up the room for sleep, right? You shouldn't be working on the computer in your bedroom. You shouldn't be watching TV. It should be dark. It should be quiet. Like set up the optimal environment. And I think that includes moving away electronics that don't need to be there. Like there's no reason to have a television in there. There's no reason to have your phone sitting on your pillow, right? At least move it to the nightstand as far away as possible, preferably on the other side of the room to just get rid of that, you know, feeling to go look at it. But yeah, I mean, I think that EMFs in general are an interesting place to look as long as we don't go the kind of crazy route.
Yeah, no, I mean, there, you know, in every single aspect of health, there's a lot of crazy people that believe the far end of things. And like you said earlier too, you know, we keep going back to this, but the diet thing, I mean, you look at the keto diet, you look at the vegetarians out there, the vegans, there's so many different religious belief systems in terms of diet that, you know, these people they're crazy. They drive you nuts and they try to say that it's this way or it's the highway and that's all that there is. But there's so much more, there's so much gray in there. It's not white or black, and it's not as you know, as simple as they want to have you believe it is.
Look, I mean, our culture has been set up for wanting the magic pill and the quick fix for everything, right? Like, so it is very – we fall into that trap again and again with diet and a lot of other things that we just want that. So people sell that, right? And look, it sells well when you can say this diet is going to fix everything and everything. You're going to sleep better. You're going to get up. You're going to – you lose weight. You're going to look better. Your skin's going to be better, right? Like everything. And yeah, some of those things are going to improve for some people, and maybe some diets work better than others for larger groups of people, and that's good, right? I think what is clear to me, though, is that our conventional wisdom around diet is not working, right? And if we accept that, and if we look at the underlying data, it's true. Like obesity is on the rise, heart disease is on the rise, type 1 diabetes is on the rise. Like all of the things are markedly increasing all around the time we were told to eat low fat, high carb diets, and replace, you know, saturated fats with these horrible vegetable oils, right? So whatever the solution is to fix that, I don't particularly care because it's about what works for the individual. But as a population, it is clear that the conventional wisdom we've been told since the 1950s roughly is not working in the United States and most modern cultures.
Yeah, it's complete bullshit at this point. Like you can just look back and just see the numbers increasing across the board and all chronic disease since like, you know, the 1940s. The numbers have just gone up, and you'd think with, you know, the amount of money that we spend on healthcare, we're the number one country in the world, the United States, on healthcare, and we're like the last in developed countries in terms of our health.
Right. And I think what I love is the argument people always make is like, well, you know, people don't listen, right? And, you know, with the diet recommendations come out and the reason people are fat is because they just eat too much and they don't listen to the recommendations. But that's not true, right? If you look at the real data, people are listening, right? Total fat consumption is down. Animal product consumption is down. Look at the data from the egg farmers and the beef farmers and like all of these other groups that put out data. Consumption is down, right? Consumption of vegetable oils is way up. We went from zero in the 1940s and 50s to now a tremendous amount. Sugar consumption is way up, right? Obviously, carbs that are related to refined sugars. All of those things are way up. So what that means is people did listen. It's just what they were told is not working.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was misinformation. It wasn't helpful. What else? So what else, David, do we have here? And we have diet, we have sleep. What else did you do to optimize your health and actually become better? Because we still haven't really touched on that yet. I mean, we mentioned it earlier, but how did this all tie into better performance in terms of business? But what's the other step there? We have exercise or something else?
Yeah, there's definitely exercise and movement, mindfulness, and you know, some sort of meditation or whatever. For me, what I found was most useful in that way is I found a very active yoga practice, so a hot vinyasa flow type practice compared to a slow yin stretching practice, where I was able to combine mindfulness, movement that was good on my joints and body, right? After doing number of years of intense running and endurance sports, which are not good for my body at all, finding something where I could move and build strength in a good way and feel more flexibility and more like feel those things, right? I think the largest one is really kind of the mindfulness practice that came from it, right? Like I was the person who would have said I would never go in the yoga room. That's silly. Like why would a guy go and do that? Right. Now, today, I practice 6 to 7 days a week on top of lifting weights. Right. So that changed pretty significantly, changed how I felt, had a pretty big impact on brain fog in the afternoon. It was very clear, days that I practiced when I was testing this, you know, how I felt in the afternoons. I think one of the largest impacts, though, is just this kind of general ability to feel and understand my body that I found from it. And it sounds like a silly example, but I can trace it back to exactly this mindfulness and yoga practice of, you know, I've cut out most television and I've cut out all news. So I used to stream, you know, CNN or some news channel on in the background in my office, and I like to have background noise, and maybe it was kind of a partial distraction or whatever. But for 2 days or 3 days, the streaming didn't work at my office. And I noticed that my mind was much more focused the morning after the streaming didn't work. So I started testing. If I stream today, how do I feel the next day? And it was very clear. Anytime I had the news on in the background, I felt worse the next day. My brain was scattered. I had less focus. I couldn't sit mindfully in meditation for like even a minute or two, right? Like it was just very difficult. So as a result, I cut out all of that. I don't watch the news anymore. I don't consume the negative content, right? And it seems so small, but the impact was so big. So that's another category, right? Obviously, movement and exercise, I think, is one. And I look at this category as like one of the areas that we've over-focused on for too long, right? Like, I think this needs to be an area that we just do things that are fun and get us outside, right? Like, I don't think it matters all that much about what it is, like moving our body. And obviously, there's data around increasing heart rate and the health benefits of that. But in general, like if we can get outside more, engage with people more, or do something that's a, you know, partial mindful practice in our movement, like I think that's the goal there. It's not about burning number of calories or counting steps or speed on the treadmill or, you know, whatever, or some fancy new machine. I don't think any of those things matter as much as getting outside.
Yeah, that's actually a fantastic point. And I think so many people overlook that just how simple but effective that can be for your life. And, you know, everybody gets caught up in, you know, keeping track of their steps per day, or how many miles they ran, or how many reps they did on bench. And it's like, you know, nobody, looking back on our ancestors, before 100 years ago, nobody ever for thousands, hundreds of thousands of years ago ever kept track of any of that stuff. They just, they worked and lived outside and they did things outside. And that's really, you know, going back to our roots, I mean, I think that's really the key to staying physically fit and you know, obviously being healthier.
I think too, if you really go back and look at it, like movement and kind of exercise, as we call it, but like just in movement in general, was very much connected with people, right? It and that, you know, if it was sport, if it was play, if it was just being outside, like it was connected with people and community. Right. And today we sit inside on our phones and our computers, disconnected from people. So I think in any way that we can bring that back, that's beneficial. And then obviously just being outside is beneficial, for sure. Like that is very clear. And so then to me, the last key to that is enjoyment, right? Like if I like riding my bike, I should do that. Right? Like if I get enjoyment from it and it puts a smile on my face, I should do it. Not because I rode 12 miles, but because I enjoyed it.
Yeah. How many hours or minutes out of the day are you spending going outside doing stuff like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I try to take a break every hour roughly, if I'm not naturally outside, and just like step outside, and even if it's for a minute or two, just kind of walk, right? Where my old office used to be, I just recently moved, there was like a little kind of shopping plaza walking area like outside, so I would kind of just walk downstairs. And even if I didn't go upstairs, just the idea of walking down the stairs I think was good. So I mean, to me, like that is the benefit right there. And then I look to like, what can I do outside with my kids, right? Like the other day, it was beautiful outside. We just moved to Austin, Texas, and it was like 75 degrees on Friday. And I'm like, why don't we just take a walk behind our house here? And we went for a 30-minute walk. And like, it was awesome. Like everyone disconnected. No one's using phones, right? Like we're walking outside. It's beautiful out. And yeah, did I get some steps in, quote unquote? Yeah. Do I know how many? Absolutely not.
And seriously, does it really matter? No. It's just, you know, it's another number that you said, like, it's good to keep track of if you absolutely have to. If you have something like epilepsy and you have to stay very strict with being in ketosis or something like that, or if you have another condition, heart disease or something, you got to keep track of, you know, exactly right. What you're doing, then yeah, you have to do it. But overall, you know, 99% of the population doesn't need to keep track of every step they take. It's just more a matter of going out and doing it and breaking a sweat or having fun or, you know, connecting, like you said, with other people.
Yeah, and I think the only benefit of those trackers, and like I wear, you know, a ring during the day that tracks stuff, is if it makes you make behavioral changes, right? Like it sounds silly, but like I will naturally say, oh, like I got this ring on, I'm going to walk up the stairs instead of taking the elevator, right? Like if it makes you make changes like that, I think there's a benefit, not in that you counted how many steps you took. But again, it's behavioral changes, right? Like maybe it reminds me to go outside. Maybe it tells me like, oh crap, I need to do this. I need to prioritize it in my day rather than just doing an extra phone call or an extra email, right? To me, the only benefit is those behavioral modifications that might come from it, not the data.
Yeah. And as far as mindfulness goes, do you do any meditation practices?
Yeah, so I've spent a lot of time looking at and thinking about meditation. I've tried all sorts of apps. I've tried the devices you put on your head, everything else. What's had the most impact for me is just sitting for 2 to 3 minutes or maybe 5 minutes with my eyes closed in the mornings, right? Again, very easy. And then obviously as part of my yoga practice, I think there's definitely a component of mindfulness. And I think what people misunderstand is like, mindfulness doesn't mean you need to meditate for an hour, right? But in our very busy world, like literally closing your eyes, sitting, and you don't have to sit in some special way, like sit on a chair if you want, sit on the floor, doesn't really matter. You know, sitting for a few minutes with your eyes closed is extremely beneficial, and very difficult, right?
Yeah.
That's what's crazy, right? And I think the difficultness, whatever the word is, the difficulty of it is very telling in how beneficial it is, right? Because our body should be able to do that, But today it's very difficult for most people to do that.
Yeah, it's very difficult. When you first start it, it's very difficult to get into it, to get into the habit of it, and to actually feel like you're getting a benefit out of it, because, you know, every like minute or two you're questioning, like, is this really working? Like, am I doing this right? But, you know, after a few weeks of actually just trying it out, you kind of like calm down and relax, and then you start to see the benefit of it. You start to see that you're more relaxed and more calm throughout the day, and that you actually enjoy those little breaks of actually, you know, stepping away from all the craziness of the world and the craziness of a business if you're running a business, and just being in your own head for a minute and actually getting out of your head for a minute and just kind of, enjoying life in the moment.
Yeah. And I think what is most interesting about mindfulness and meditation is I think it opens the eyes to feelings within the body that we often ignore. Maybe it's the pain in the back or the side. When you sit for 5 minutes, and that doesn't sound like a long time, you'll very quickly start to realize it's not really a pain in your back, but maybe it's a pain in, you know, your front leg or something, right? Because as you sit and understand and internalize and feel the ache or the pain, you start to actually realize where it's coming from, right? And you give it that chance before we just take a pill or an Advil or something like that, right? I think that is tremendously impactful. And then you can target fixing that, right? Like, okay, let me find, why am I getting a pain in my front leg? Maybe I need to look at ART or some sort of like active release or, you know, massage therapy. Maybe I have to look at, you know, foam rolling, like lots of options, right? But if I hadn't sat, I wouldn't even have known that. I would have just said, oh, I have back pain because, you know, whatever.
Yeah. No, certainly. It gives yourself more of an awareness of things going on, like you said, in your body, but also around you, and it can give you a different perspective on some of the other issues you're having in your life, whether that's like a business issue or some personal issue. Gives you more clarity and more insight, I think, into different things that have popped up around you.
Yeah, so I compare it to this, right? Like, people always say, in the shower, I get the best ideas, right? And it's always been a kind of funny cliche. But in reality, like, it's very true, right? Like, in the shower, people solve some of their biggest problems. And I think it's because it's that near state of meditation, right? You're going through a set routine of stuff. I wash my hair this way. I do it the same every time. I wash my body next, that, you know, whatever it is, right? And I'm disconnected. I don't have my phone, my computer, or anything else. And I'm in this kind of state that is near meditation, right? And I think when you describe it to people that way, it's like, oh, okay, like, it doesn't mean stopping my brain necessarily. It means allowing my brain the chance to do what it wants to do and flow into the areas it wants to flow into, not think about nothing.
Yeah, and that's a good point too, is just like setting your phone aside too when you're doing work. I found that that doing that little task right there, I get so much more done. I'm so much more productive when I don't have to worry about getting a text or an email every couple minutes and, you know, checking my social media pages if I get a notification. Like, it's just, you know, out of your head, you can actually dive more into what you're really trying to do and not worry about all the other clutter there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a whole section in the book with like a bunch of these little tips, right? Like, turn off all notifications on social media, email, phone, everything. No notifications ever. It doesn't mean don't do email. Like, I do a tremendous amount of email, and I think it's, for me, it's very productive because I can get a lot done, but I don't need the notifications popping up, right, on any device for any reason. I delete all social media from my phone, right? Like, I was sitting there and started to realize more than a year ago now, it was probably before last Christmas, it was before last Thanksgiving, right? So more than a year ago now, I just decided I'm going to test this. Every time I had a free moment, I would open up Facebook or Instagram on my phone and like scroll through, right? Like, mindlessly scroll through, as we see everyone doing everywhere. So I just deleted it from my phone. And all of a sudden, rather than mindlessly scrolling through my phone, I started to think about the important things and these kind of interim moments, right? Like waiting for the train to arrive or, you know, in traffic or whatever the thing was that I was trying to mindlessly fill time with. I started thinking about much more productive things. So very small change, big impact.
I'm guessing, David, that you don't have an Instagram or a Snapchat.
So look, I mean, look, I do have an Instagram. It's D Hauser. I have a Twitter. It's DH. I have these things. I try to manage them from the computer as little as possible, but there is just no escaping it from a business perspective. It is useful. I don't use it on a personal way anymore. I try to connect with people. I'm much like, to me, even the idea of texting someone directly is much more engaging than it was to post pictures on Facebook and see what they were doing. Like, at least I'm having a two-way conversation with someone I care about. So I've tried to move things in that direction, even though it's not like being ridiculous, like I only speak to people on the phone or in person or some like ridiculous statement, right? Like, no, like there's people that I care about that don't live in the area I live in because I just moved or whatever. And text message is a great way to accomplish that. I think it's better than Facebook though.
Yeah. No, I mean, I say that, you know, I just said that last comment in total jest because I love exactly what you're saying, what you've done and the implications of it too. I can just think back, you know, 6-7 years ago, I think maybe even 5 years ago, where like nobody had any of these Facebook apps, nobody had Instagram, nobody had Snapchat. And it was like, you know, it was so much, you were just so more, much more calm and in tune to your day as you go about your day. And, you know, just little things like you said, riding the train or, you know, walking down the street, whatever it was, you were just so much more focused on things where it's like now these social media apps have literally just made us crazy and so obsessed with like notification after notification.
Yeah, it's an addictive thing, and they know that, and they've developed it very well. They're very good at it, right? And I think what's even more damaging is this, you know, move towards photos, right? So now we're experiencing life through our phones, even when we're in the thing we're doing, right? We go to a concert and we take a picture and a video. You know, we eat dinner and we take a picture and a video, right? Like, rather than experiencing the thing, now we're still behind the screen while we're actively doing the thing. Right. And like I was guilty of it. Right. Like, oh, this would make a great Instagram picture. Right. Like, let me turn the dish this way so it looks better. Like, or let me just taste it and enjoy it. Right.
Yeah.
And it seems simple, but like I think that path is a very dangerous path.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. And unfortunately, I think for most people, they're not going to go the other way and like, you know, do what you've done or what some other people are doing and just kind of step away from the technology. And unfortunately, they're getting more enthralled with it and more enveloped with the whole madness of it. But, you know, hopefully people listening to our show and other guys that you're talking to can kind of step back and at least temper it down so that they have management, they have control of it, and it's not really controlling them anymore. David, putting this all together, though, so you optimize diet, sleep, exercise, yoga, mindfulness, putting it all together, man, how has this helped you? I'm curious, in your business, how has it made you more productive, more successful, more rich, if you want to talk about, you know, the profits of it all? How has this benefited your business?
Yeah, so I think the easiest example is the book, right? Like I never would have thought of writing a book because I couldn't focus long enough to do it. You know, I was very good at doing small, discrete tasks. And this just came naturally as I got more and more focused and I got honestly more and more done. So I had more and more time, right? So I never set out to write this. Like it was never a goal. I didn't even think about it. Until I was going through this and people started to keep asking me questions and how should I do this and what'd you do here? And I started taking notes, right? So I think like that to me was the example of like the impact on my productivity. If you want to look at more kind of typical measures, right? Like obviously I've been very lucky and I've done well in kind of the entrepreneurship space. And I think that continues. But the metric I look at is, right, unfortunately, is number of emails, right? I do inbox zero every day, and I still get the same number of emails, but I've gotten much more productive in handling those. So I get to inbox zero earlier. I found that. And my number of emails has increased, but my time hasn't necessarily. I've become very good at delegating tasks and doing other things. So that's a measure. In terms of dollars, I have no idea how to measure that. Again, though, like it's how do I feel, right? Like at the end of the day, much like the beginning of my day when I wake up, like do I feel rested and ready for the day? Like I want to say hell yes every day, right? Like that's my goal. At the end of my day, right, and I don't have a traditional end to the day because, you know, I like to be, you know, do stuff with the kids and do other things, but like kind of before bedtime at some point, can I say to myself, like, today was a great day and I got done what I wanted to get done? If I can have more days like that, that's what I'm looking for, right? And it doesn't mean like, did I check off this exact box or did I do this on the task list? Like, it's that feeling at the end of the day, like, today was a great day. And that's what I want more of.
David, this is an awesome interview, man. I really appreciate it. What's the last send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience and then a place that our listeners can check out your latest upcoming book?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question. I get asked this all the time. And, you know, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately is this idea of fear and, you know, kind of fear holding us back. And I think we're held back by fear in two ways. One, the fear of, you know, losing what we have. And then two, the fear of not getting what we want, right? And these two things hold us back in life. So if we can kind of release those and say, you know what, I'm not afraid of either of those. And it's okay to not have what I have today. And it's okay not to get what I want. We actually get much more of what we want, right? When we kind of release that fear and we don't let it control us anymore. So that's been on my mind a lot lately. You can find out more about the book at evolvebook.com or davidhauser.com. You know, my contact information and things like that. I love talking to people about these topics. You know, I think those are probably the best ways to reach me. Although I am on social media, I don't spend a lot of time there.
David, thanks again, man, for coming on. Really appreciate it. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Justin.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.